Good afternoon and welcome to the Dino Herbert Show Everyday Hero. Today's Everyday Hero is a gentleman by the name of Paul Lawrence Vann. Paul is an international speaker. He's an author. He's the host of a radio show called The Wealthy Speaker Show. He's a life coach. He's also a leadership and diversity expert. We had a great conversation. Let's listen in.
Dino, honored to be here, and thank you for that warm welcome. Looking forward to the interview.
Yes, indeed. No problem at all. Now, I understand they call you the Mr. Difference Maker. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct, Dino. They call me Mr. Difference Maker primarily because when I come to an organization, I work with individuals, I make a difference.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so you're a speaker, you're an author, you're a radio host, and I also understand that you run a foundation. Tell me a little bit about the foundation, Paul.
Yeah, Dino, that's a great question. That means you've done some research, and I'll be glad to provide you some answers about the foundation. But during the course of my 20-year military career, I always found myself volunteering.
Okay.
I volunteered for things such as Asian Pacific Heritage Week, Black History Month, the fraternity and sorority events. And it dawned on me that I'm a servant. I'm a servant. I understand that I'm a leader, but a servant as well, meaning I give back to the community. And what I decided to do once my speaking career took off, I just decided, well, I want to give back to the local community. And I founded what's now called the Paul Lawrence Vann Foundation, which is a foundation with the mission of providing financial literacy as well as leadership development for youth from low-income and disadvantaged communities. And, of course, our motto is when it comes to finance, everyone counts. And so I decided to come up with this program because I know it can make a difference, especially in light of what's happening in our economy now. So that's how the Paul Lawrence Vann Foundation came about. And the time for it is right. It's definitely a good time for it to teach young men and women personal financial skills to make them become financially fit.
That's excellent, excellent. And, Paul, if you would, tell me your motto again. I think your cell phone might have skipped out a little bit. Tell me what your motto for your foundation is again.
Yeah, our motto is when it comes to financial literacy, everyone counts.
Okay, that's great. That was the part I missed. That's a good motto. I like that a lot. So, Paul, you are doing a whole lot of things. It sounds like your days are full with regard to everything that you're doing. Why don't you take me a little bit back to the beginning and tell me how you came to be who you are and how you came to get involved in so many different things. Take me back to the beginning and how you got started.
Well, I tell you, Dino, that's a great question. In terms of how I got started with all the different activities that I participate in, I really need another me.
Okay. I can understand that. Looking at your resume, it looks like you need three or four of you.
I need a few more of me, Dino, but I'll answer your question. And the way it all came about in terms of my being, it really stems from my youth, growing up with a great mom and dad, having God in our lives, great outreach with our extended family, aunts and uncles, grandparents. And I always found myself very a busy person. My goal growing up was always, when I grow up, I'm going to leave home and I'm going to make something of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it all stemmed from that. And it also stemmed from the fact that neither of my parents were able to earn a high school diploma, nor my grandparents before them. So I actually became the first child in the family of 9 children, 5 girls and 4 boys, to earn a high school diploma.
Oh, okay.
But that wasn't enough for me. I decided I'm going to go to college. I went on to Shaw University in Raleigh, North Carolina. Prior to attending college, my high school guidance counselor told me I didn't have what it took. I didn't have the wherewithal to become a good college student. And fast forward, you know, 4 years later, I graduated with academic honors.
All right.
And I was a business and accounting major, and then I also enrolled in Air Force ROTC. I went through basic training there in Dover, Delaware for 6 weeks, and it was the most fun I think I'd had since I've been born.
Okay.
And I went through the two-year program over there at North Carolina State University, and I graduated. I was commissioned a second lieutenant in the United States Air Force on the day I graduated from college.
Okay.
And in so doing, even when I was in college, I was volunteering, raising money for our cadet, for our detachment there at North Carolina State, of all things selling donuts. But I did whatever it took to provide service to the community, to help our detachment out, help the fellow cadets. And then, of course, it was time for the Air Force, my first Air Force assignment. I was stationed in Dayton, Ohio at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base for 4 years.
Okay, and that's right up the street from me.
Right up the street. And those were the best 4 years of my professional life because that's where I really built my foundation in terms of service. And even while assigned as a second lieutenant and then ultimately a first lieutenant, I was a volunteer for the Red Cross in the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base Regional Medical Center. And the program that I managed was bringing entertainment in on Thursday nights to entertain the patients who were at the hospital.
Okay.
And so that's where this all started. It all started right there at Wright-Patterson in Dayton, Ohio in 1980.
Okay.
That's where it started.
So you started speaking to the patients there as you were volunteering for the Red Cross.
Well, I was a Red Cross, assisted the Red Cross for all the wounded troops that would come through or some of the veterans that would come through. And I actually coordinated to bring speakers, bring comedians in, people that played music, bringing music people, singers in to the hospital. And that's kind of where I had the notion of, you know, I think one day I can become a speaker.
Right, right.
And then after the four-year tour was over, I went to Atlanta for a year and worked in a special program called Education with Industry. After I left there, I went to Scott Air Force Base near St. Louis. And a two-star general by the name of Gerald Prather, he recommended, hey, I want you to come in and try out for my speakers bureau. And I went in, I tried out. It was absolutely lousy. I did
it
terribly. But I could admit it. But I knew that I could speak. And basically, I was going through the motions just kind of at the tryout session. And then, but they selected me because they said, I think he can do it. He's just kind of hamming it up here. And I started speaking. They sent me to universities throughout the United States. I started out in the New England states and at the University of Connecticut, Storrs, Boston University, St. Michael's in Vermont, as well as Norwich College and University of Alabama and University of Rolla in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. So that's where I really started. And that passion has always been there for speaking.
Excellent, excellent. And so I know you're a member of the NSA, the National Speakers Association. And what, Paul, are your main two or three keynote speeches that you give across the country?
Yes, I'll be glad to provide that. My main keynote speakers that I deliver, Dino, one happens to be Leadership is Influence.
Okay.
Having attended every leadership school the Air Force has to offer, including Air War College, leadership is definitely very high on my list. In this particular program, I talk to people about the fact that if you're not influencing other people, the people that work for you, or even the people that are subordinate to you and those you work for, then you're not really a leader.
Because
leadership truly is about influencing people, situations, as well as circumstances. Another program that I have is called Living Without Limits. And Living Without Limits is a dynamic motivational program that really resonates with people because I tell people to think outside the box. Think big. Think big. Live a big life. Live a life that where if you could make any mistakes that you wanted to make, but you would still succeed. So Living Without Limits is another one of my core programs, and it's very motivational. And my third program is Diversity program titled Diversity Improves Your Bottom Line.
Okay.
And I've probably delivered that program to more people than any other program I've ever delivered. And that diversity program is a program about where we are as individuals. For example, I mentioned earlier, Dino, that I'm one of nine children.
Right.
I'm an oldest son in a family of nine children. But every one of us are different, and we're in the same family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get down to the finite points of why diversity and why it's so important. It's not so much an issue of race or gender as much as it is, it's the different intricacies of what diversity is all about. You know, it includes things such as the amount of education that a person received, the geographical area they grew up in. It includes the type of education that you have, whether you're a union employee or non-union, whether you're military or non-military, whether your preference, sexual preference is. It's all and everything. It's a 360-degree look at a human being and not judging the entire group of people, but just looking at that one individual through those lens, that lens of diversity.
Right. That's very interesting. You said you have a family of nine kids. I come from a family of seven, and it has allowed me to be able to interact with all types of people because you had to, you know, whether it was fighting over a bowl of cereal or
right.
trying to negotiate who got to go to the bathroom next, it was always something in terms of negotiating with all those people at your home. Have you found that to be the same situation, growing up and learning how to deal with it, other people?
It's exactly that because, as you stated, it's diplomacy.
Uh-huh.
It's negotiation. It's getting along with people. It's communication. It's non-communication. It's your talent, the different talent that we have within the family. And in the end, we know that we're all covered by the Spirit of God, and we also know that we're all covered by love that was provided by our parents to think enough of us to bring us into this world.
Now, I know I'm looking here at some of my notes that in addition to your time in the military, I understand you spent some time with Mobil Oil Company.
Yes.
Were you at Mobil for a while, or...?
I was at Mobil Oil Company. Actually, when I look at my assignment, it was May 31st
mm-hmm.
of 1988 was my last day in the Air Force as a captain.
Okay.
And it was the last day before, of course, 2 years later, I was brought back on duty. So I separated from the Air Force after 3.5 years near the St. Louis area.
Okay.
Went to Mobil Oil Company. They came in to recruit me as a financial analyst. And I handled their monthly income reports, their annual budgets, the audits. We had what we call a full maintenance overhaul on the plant, the facility, and that facility generated $360 million a year.
Okay. Which is
a very huge program. And that's actually, Mobil Oil Company in Beaumont, Texas, is actually where I learned diversity because they enrolled me in one of their initial diversity programs that they ever offered at that company in the fall of 1989. And then all of a sudden I received letters in the mail from the United States Air Force saying, we'd like for you to come back on duty.
Okay, okay.
And by that time, Dino, I had gained about, 30 pounds over my weight limit because I was
okay.
eating a lot of that Cajun food down there.
Right.
South Texas, really good jambalaya and everything, and I had 3 weeks to lose 33 pounds.
Oh, man.
Dino, you know, I lost 33 pounds in three
weeks.
Did you
really?
I sure did. And it was a blessing.
Right.
Because
right.
It gave me the chance to get back in the Air Force. And the main reason why I left is because I did request that Mobil Oil Company assign me instead of Texas on the East Coast, somewhere close where my mother was, who had just had a triple bypass heart surgery, and they said, well, you know, we'd like to, that'd be nice, but we're not going to do it. And I said,
right.
Well, I have to take some action. I'm going to make sure my mom is taken care of. I can be close to her and my dad, whose health was also failing. And I came back, and the Air Force blessed me by giving me an assignment at the Pentagon, and I stayed there for 12 consecutive years.
I see. That's great. That's great. That your story about losing 33 pounds in 3 weeks is very interesting, and I think it's appropriate with regard to discussing business situations with aspiring entrepreneurs. I had someone tell me once that, you know, one of the problems that entrepreneurs and I think business people in general have with regard to getting things done is procrastination. And I had someone tell me that if you want to get rid of your procrastination, it's to set yourself a very aggressive goal. And that will help you to really focus on what you need to do. So if there's something that you think needs to take 6 months to do, set yourself a goal of 3 months.
That's correct.
That will kind of light a fire under you. So you had 33 pounds to lose in 3 weeks, that you had to really focus and be on top of your game in order to meet that goal. So you had to, you know, run or lift weights or whatever you were doing on a daily basis to meet that. Yeah.
You brought up a very valid point, and the point of that and the application to business is that you have to really intensify the passion for what you're trying to achieve. In other words, when I lost that 33 pounds, what I did the first day is I cut out all ketchup, mayonnaise, and only ate mustard and a little bit of food I ate. I stopped eating fast foods.
Mm-hmm.
I started going to very healthy foods. And then the first day I went to the gym and I lift weights. That evening I ran a mile around the high school track where my house is down there. The
wow.
second day I went to aerobics class. That evening I ran 2 miles around that track. I got all the way up to 10 miles over the course of that 3 week period of time. And I knew how to do it because I ran track in college. So I knew I
right.
could do it.
Right.
All
right.
I'm going to tell you how I knew I could do it. I put one foot in front of the other.
There you go.
And once I put one foot in front of the other, it's done.
Well, that's an excellent thing, because I think oftentimes some people don't believe they can start a business in today's economy or any economy because they are looking at the entirety of it. And instead of just breaking it down into smaller and smaller pieces until they get to the point, well, what's the very first step that I need to take? And that's really all it is taking daily steps until you reach whatever goal you've set in front of yourself. You can't look at it as one big, I'm going to start a business. You got to look at it as, okay, I'm going to make a phone call to the library to do some research about the industry. It's got to be the first, smallest, simple step you need to take in order to achieve your goal. So I think that's excellent advice.
And, Dino, I really love what you just said about you take the steps and you take them over time. You don't take them all at once and take it in its entirety. And the way I look at it is, each day you do one additional thing leading to the accomplishment of a given goal or objective that one has, especially in business. Instead of looking at the entire market as a whole, look at it just as a niche, just as a segment. And that segment, you have expertise in it. For example, mm-hmm. if you're a customer service expert, then you go and you take a look at perhaps retail stores, or you look at fast food restaurants, and you pick a segment and you become the best at that particular segment at whatever you're doing.
So tell me a little bit about your book, Paul. I understand you've written a book, Living on Higher Ground. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I wrote this book, and it really was a motivation, a passion that I had for years. And I was actually put on a 12-city speaking tour mm-hmm. by an organization called the National Military Family Association. And they wanted me to speak to families and youth who had family members deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan when war first started out. And when I was on that tour, people just kept asking me, well, where's your book? And basically what they were saying was, we want to take you home with us through your
right.
book.
Right.
And so what I decided to do, I had my first speaking coach, which was the late Dottie Walters, who wrote the book Speak and Grow Rich.
Okay.
And I went to her marketing symposium in Burbank, California, and I sit beside Lou Ferrigno, the Incredible Hulk.
Is that right? Okay.
I sure did. I didn't give him any trouble either.
I can imagine that.
Oh, yeah, but he was just gracious, very gracious. I also sit with Bruce Cameron, who wrote that TV show called 8 Simple Ways to Date My Daughter. He was there as well. And in addition to that, I met people in the publishing industry, literary agents. I met people that design book covers and copyright experts. And after I departed Dottie's workshop, I ended up flying back home. And while I was on a five-hour flight from Long Beach, California to Washington, Dulles, I just set a date. I'm going to start writing my book on October the 19th.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, my goal is to finish it in 30 days. And that's exactly what I did. And the back of my book reads, "You can have goals and you can have greatness. This is the story of having both."
Excellent, excellent. That's good stuff. I know one other thing I wanted to talk to you about, Paul. I'm aware, and I've actually had the pleasure of being on your show, your radio show, the Wealthy Speaker Show. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what your purpose is there on your radio show and some of the guests that you've had on and how you got started doing that?
That's a great question, Dino, and I'll answer it this way. I was looking a couple of years ago. I was looking for another platform to obtain more exposure and let more people know about what I'm doing. And when I initially started the show, the Wealthy Speaker Show, I came up with that title because I do have a background in finance, mm-hmm. and I wanted to look at and focus on entrepreneurs. I wanted to look at authors. I wanted to take a look at small business owners, and I just look at everybody and their expertise and niche. And I wanted people to be able to come to the Wealthy Speaker Show and listen to a lot of the talented and gifted people like yourself, Dino, who came on the show, and you talked about what you do. And I think it's important that people hear that, and not only from the major radio stations in the local community, but Blog Talk Radio is an international platform, and there are people that call in from the country of Hungary, from the Philippines, from New Zealand, from Canada, from Australia, and so it's a huge, huge platform. I like to bring people on there. We can talk about the issues of the day. We talk about the stimulus plan. We may talk about, like tonight, I'm interviewing a young lady, Daphne Clark Hudson, and she's the queen of the empowering soul. I've had Dino Herbert on there, that great and dynamic man out there in Ohio.
You're so kind.
Last night I had on a gentleman who was just outstanding, Kenneth Darrell Brown, business whiz on there. And right now I'm really planning on having a lady on the 18th by the name of Myra Golden, who's a customer service expert. So I've had some tremendous people, a good friend of mine named Gail Murphy, who is a celebrity interviewer in Los Angeles. She's interviewed over 15,000 people over the course of her career. And so it was interesting for me to be posing the questions to her when she's the expert at that. And she taught me the interviewing skills as well.
One other thing I wanted to ask you before I ask you to provide some advice to aspiring entrepreneurs is, I understand a few days ago you were interviewed by the great Maya Angelou. Is that correct?
That is correct, Dino. And I tell you, it was really a fantastic experience. And what happened 3 weeks ago, they had contacted me about interviewing me, but I had a conflict in schedule with their schedule. And so they called me Monday evening and said, "We'd like to interview you. Dr. Maya Angelou would like to interview you tomorrow." And the theme of the particular show was, what's it like to be an American?
Mm-hmm.
And I had written her a letter, just explained to her what it meant to me to be an American, the fact that we live in a country that's free, we live in a country where we can express ourselves like we do on your radio show, like when we in the newspaper, on television. She was such a gracious host, and of course, I met her at Capitol Hill one time, and to be interviewed by her is really one of the highlights of my life. One of the big questions that Dr. Maya Angelou had for me was, what was it like to have dinner in the White House with President Clinton and First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton? I said, it was absolutely out of sight. It was a great, of course, President Clinton, he can talk forever. I said, but besides that, the food was really good.
That's good. Yeah, so you're right there in the hub of everything that's going on, right there in our nation's capital. I believe we talked previously. You were down amongst all the festivities for the inauguration of President Obama, were you not?
Yes, I was. I was a part of that in terms of being in the area. There were a lot of restrictions during that time. In fact, a lot of people were not even able to get in because it was such an overwhelming experience. If I'm not mistaken, in this general area. Anyway, there's 6 million people, but on that day there were a lot more. There were
right.
probably 10 million, so the traffic was shut down. You'd have to take the metro, and even if you took that 3 o'clock in the morning, it was backed up.
Wow.
And it was like nothing that's ever been done in this country before is what it was. It was like 4 or 5 Olympics at one time.
Pretty amazing. Pretty
yeah,
amazing.
But President Obama, he's brought a new concept, a new look about that change. And that change he's talking about is change from within. It's the mindset is what he's talking about.
And since you have a financial background, why don't you speak a little bit about, you know, the economy and the stimulus package, and, you know, how do you see things shaking out? What is your opinion? What are you telling your clients and your audiences with regard to today's economy and how they should be thinking about it?
First of all, Dino, that's a great question to focus in on the stimulus plan, what I think it's going to do and what people should do during this time. And I think the main thing that people should really do is really start becoming more aware. There's a need for an increase and enhancement of our awareness of what's happening right now. It's to look at the stimulus bill and saying, is there fairness in it for the hardworking men and women in the United States, for example? If we look at the fact we've put billions of dollars into the banking system, personally, I don't think that was the right move. I think that some of the banks, what should have happened is that some of them should have been able to fail, and then they can correct themselves through bankruptcy, and perhaps some investors would come in to help. But the way it stacks up right now, with having already put that money out into the system, as taxpayers, we'll never see that return. So we'll still have to pay that bill. With President Obama, he just put his stimulus plan through the system, and here in the state of Maryland, for example, they are already starting to see those monies trickle down. But we all know that the trickle-down economics has never worked, and it won't work this time either. And so what we have to do is be more vigilant, work with our members of Congress, work with our governors, work with our local elected officials, and try to let them know that, well, no, we think this is the way to do it. And that's kind of what I was doing yesterday. I'm a part of a nonprofit collaborative, and we met with local officials for the planning board and just let them know that we have services that we can provide in our community. So we have to become very active and very vigilant, almost like it was in a civil rights movement, to correct this. You know, unfortunately, one of the things that have happened with the stimulus bill is that a lot of money is missing, but no one is really talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there needs to be some dialogue in terms of, well, what happened to it? Because our
when you
children,
say missing, what do you mean it's missing?
In other words, when the initial monies were put out there from the Bush administration, they can't account for it now.
I see.
No one can account for it. But I do know in my accounting class, when I have 40 hours of accounting, I could take the CPA exam, that you can always account for it if you want to.
Right.
Because the numbers don't lie, right? Numbers
That's
don't
right.
change. And so you one has to ask the question, and the statement is, what happened to the money? That would be the only question I would ask. Okay, if the Treasury Secretary has farmed this money out to different banks, okay, how much did they farm out? And then after they provided them that money, what happened to it? Because as an auditor, you can always get a trail.
Right.
You see, and so I think that the stimulus plans themselves were bad for the American people. It really was bad.
Okay.
What I would rather have happened if, say, President Obama, if he had decided instead of $75 billion for the housing recovery, that he would go on and put out $200 billion and pay for every house in America. Why? Because it only takes $200 billion to pay every house off, and that would increase the confidence. And you're saying, well, how could he pay that? Well, we're going to be taxed anyway. We're going to be taxed now. We're not getting anything for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we might as well have paid off all the houses. You increase the confidence of people. It would have created jobs, and there is your answer, because the road to recovery is through the real estate market.
I see. I see.
That's the road of recovery. 200 billion could have done it. We could have done it by now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do I do? I've talked to several people over the last couple weeks who have been laid off from their safe, secure jobs, and they're, you know, they don't know what to do. They've got 30 days. They've got 45 days. Some people have a couple weeks. And I actually kind of use that in one of my presentations that I do about, you know, is your Titanic sinking? Try entrepreneurship. And so one of the things I do, I'm strumming the chords and blowing the horn of entrepreneurship. Start your own business. And I've had the pleasure of interviewing some people who actually started their businesses
mm-hmm.
last year in the midst of the recession, who started right at the end of December. Another guy I just interviewed last week started his business last February, and the recession was already officially here. And so what advice, Paul, would you give to someone who's in that situation? I'm about to lose my job. There are no jobs out there, so it seems. I'm considering starting a new business. I don't know what to do. What advice would you give to those people?
That's a great question, Dino. And what do people do who are about to lose their jobs or already lost it? First thing I would say is just simply do a very quick assessment of your skill sets, of your talent. A lot of people have lost their job not because they didn't have the skills, they didn't have the talent, it's because the company really was going under. So I would tell people, number one, make a personal assessment of where you are, take a look at what your debt, what you owe, write those creditors real quick, let them know your circumstances, number one, especially if you have a mortgage. Number two, I would tell them, don't just try to do it yourself. Look at other people who are at your company or at the business you used to be in, and perhaps just start your own business from that. All too often, people looking around in other places for what they think is grass is green on the other side, when the grass they're standing on is actually one that's best for them. And so the people have some common interests. They've lost their job. They're at the same company or a competing company, and they can pool their skill sets together. I know engineers can get together and form an engineering firm. I know that CPAs can do that. I know lawyers can do that. And
right.
people that are working at General Motors can do it too, because there are skill sets that people need in other industries, and they can also become professional speakers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, that's one I would say, because they can go out on the circuit and help turn these, take the companies who are still laying people off, they're still going to need training, go back in as a consultant.
Right.
Go back
right.
in as a consultant and consult to the companies and help them get their footing, economic and financial footing back under them. And but don't give up. Start a collaborative. Start a nonprofit. Because the needs are great. The number one need in America is food, because if you don't have any food to eat, it's going to be very hard to work. Number two is affordable housing. So there's an opportunity to do some work to find affordable housing, whether it's purchasing apartments as a collaborative corporation, or if it's to find food for people. And then from that, you can generate jobs off of that.
Excellent, excellent. Those are great words of advice, Paul, and I appreciate that. I want to thank you for being here with me today. I'm certain that all of my listeners have benefited from your words of wisdom and your passion, and you're a very busy man. Paul, if you would, why don't you tell the people again how they can get a hold of you if they want you to come speak, if they want you to come and do some coaching for them, or if they want to get a hold of any of your books or any of your other products. Why don't you tell the folk how they can get in touch with you?
Well, thank you, Dino, and thank you for being such a gracious host, and I've really enjoyed this opportunity. If people want to contact me, they, of course, can do that through my website, www.paullawrencevan.com. My phone number is area code 1-800-476-8976, and they can get me on an email at paul@paullawrencevan.com. They can also purchase my book at www.livingonhigherground.com as well. And through all of those different avenues to contact me, I look forward to hearing from any and all that call on me. And I do appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be on your show as well, Dino.
Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Dino Herbert Show, Everyday Hero. Why don't you drop me a line and let me know what you thought about today's episode? You can also find me at dinoherbert.com for other books, recordings, and to book me to speak at your next engagement. It's always a pleasure having you here. And remember, I am passionate about people who are pursuing their potential.